This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 46, with entrepreneur, enabler, and founder of enthusiasticclay.com, Clay Green.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to today's Angles of a Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you too can do the work you're meant to do. I'm JC Preston, your host today. I'm part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and more importantly, connecting them with the resources and community they need to help share their message with others. This session is powered by the Traveler's Mindset. If you've thought about traveling around the world to places you've never been to before, but haven't quite pulled the trigger, there's probably a few concerns that you have going through your head. Maybe you've thought about one of the following. Traveling is pretty expensive. I don't know, have that kind of money. How do I even start preparing to travel abroad? How do I start exploring when I get there? I won't have any fun because I don't know anyone who's there. These are just some of the concerns that many people have when thinking about traveling abroad. If you want to get these questions answered, then Ginger Kern, part of the team here at New Inceptions, has prepared a great course for you. It's called the Travel Savvy eCourse. In it, you'll find all kinds of useful information, including how to prepare to go, dealing with the airport, what to do when you get there, and how to properly set out on your new adventure. If traveling abroad is something that you're serious about doing in the not-too-distant future, then I'd highly recommend checking this course out via newinceptions.com/travel-savvy. Again, that's newinceptions.com/travel-savvy. Also, don't forget that my new ebook called The Six Cornerstones of a Successful Online Business is now available. If you're a global learner or want to see the entire layout of your future business before you get started, then this is a must-have of your digital library. And when you're starting your business, you have to have a solid foundation in why you're wanting to actually do it. Each person's why is specific for them, and if you're having trouble putting your mind around your why, then there's some resources I mentioned and the six cornerstones that will help you figure this part out. Again, you can get the ebook for free at newinceptions.com/six cornerstones. And again, that's newinceptions.com/six cornerstones. All right. So speaking of finding your why, today's interview is with a great, great, great storyteller. And in fact, this conversation I had with today's guest is definitely one that could have gone further. In fact, it did. He's incredibly passionate in the work that he does. Clay Green was someone that I was connected through Daniel Postma, who Ninja and I had the opportunity to speak with back in session 35. And Daniel himself, being a very interesting guy, got the opportunity to interview with Clay. And so I shared that as part of the show note extras back there, and then kind of promoted the podcast a little bit. And Clay was like, "Hey, man, thanks for letting me know." And I was like, "Dude, totally." And we got to talking, and then over a couple of months, actually got to talk to each other quite a bit. And you know, the thing about Clay is that he's definitely an asset to anyone's network, right? He's a catalyst, and I can only imagine the results that his clients get. So in this particular chat, we talk about how his Navy career propelled him into what he's done ever since, which is training, and how people can live in a charged life. Those of you guys familiar with Brendan will know what I'm talking about there, and what it's like to be one of Brendan Burchard's certified high performance coaches. Don't forget, show notes are available at newinceptions.com/session46. And I'll be on the other side of the conversation to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm so happy to welcome today's guest, Clay Green, here to the AOL podcast. And Clay, thank you so much for coming on. Welcome to the show.
Thrilled to be here, JC. It's freaking awesome. I'm excited, and I'm glad we connected. I'm excited.
So, you know, let's kind of get down into the nitty gritty here, because I know that we have a lot to go through. And and first of all, you know, we're going to kind of briefly go through your background, and I do this with everybody. And you actually started your career as a veteran, or not a veteran. You had to actually go through it first before you became a veteran. But you were actually in the Navy, and you were in a submarine? Right.
Yes. Oh, I was, wow. It was crazy. And you know, one of my favorite quotes is the one, and I can't quote it exactly, but basically you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking back. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started doing webinars and training others that I realized, holy cow, I've literally been doing this since then.
Oh, wow. You know, that's cool. Yeah. That's been a while since that was 88 and 90. So that's, wow. So you have a lot of experience underneath your belt there.
Yeah. a couple weeks.
But, I married into a military family. So I definitely appreciate your time that you put in. And, one of the things that you were a specialist on there, not a specialist, but you know, what your specialty was electrical stuff, right?
Well, yes and no. I was a specialist. I love, there's, you know how you got your bragging points, right?
Right.
Well, my time in the Navy is actually one of my most favorite and biggest things that I remember when I try and look at things that I've achieved or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was a nuclear reactor operator.
Okay.
On submarines. Now, back in the day, back when I was going through that school, they used to tell us that this is the second hardest school in the nation. Mm. And I was like, whoa, what's the first one? You know, that begs the question. And they told us that an MIT engineering degree was like the first hardest. And I immediately, and I wasn't straight out of high school. I'd spent a year or something like that before I went active in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I immediately said, well, that's bull. Those MIT engineers, they got fraternities and sororities. They can do pranks. You know, they've got time to take apart police cars and put them on top of buildings. And I'm
yeah you're not going to Animal House anytime soon, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
So that school was particularly tough. It was over half the people that enter that school don't make it through it. Mm. And my favorite bragging point is I made it through. And I had to work hard. So there was a couple, you know, there's like a very small percentage of people that have these photographic memories and they just don't have to study ever. Mm-hmm. I actually knew a couple of them. And I was not one of them. I had to work really hard. But once I got through the school, I was actually picked up as a staff pickup instructor. Mm. And so less than 1% of the people that make it through the school get picked up as a staff pickup. So that was my first taste of adult training, if you will. That was when I was literally teaching nuclear reactor operators. Now, the thing with nuclear reactor operators and the electronics, you have to know the electronics so that you can understand all the systems that are used to control the reactor.
Oh, okay.
So that's how the electronics tie in. I was an electronics technician, and but as a nuclear reactor operator.
Gotcha.
So I was actually teaching these kids how to operate a nuclear reactor underwater on a submarine with a torpedo chasing them and a fire burning behind them. Right. So like I was literally already, and I didn't realize this is that whole dots thing. I didn't realize it until later that I was literally teaching people how to avoid survival reactions, how to not react to something as deadly as a fire or a torpedo or just the stress of being where you're at, you know, under the ice or off the coast of wherever you're at. And stay focused on what you wanted to accomplish. Hmm. And that's basically what I do now.
Right.
Right. It's just, it dawned on me at that time recently that I've been doing that long.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. Wow. Yeah.
So how did you even choose that? That's what you wanted to have your specialty in and doing this and doing the nuclear reactor. I mean, were you always wanting to do technical kind of stuff growing up or what?
Oh no. Wow. It's been a while since somebody asked me that question. I love it. It's kind of weird. I was a below average high school student in Alabama for most of my student career until they gave me some testing and they realized, oh, I'm supposed to be in advanced placement. So like my senior year, I actually did pretty good in high school because I was challenged and I was enjoying the stuff I was learning. But, I was in that anyway, when it came time to go in the Navy, I was planning on going as explosive ordnance disposal as an EOD tech. And I was like, that'd be cool. You know, get all in shape and hang out with the SEALs and learn how to dive and all that. And then my wife at the time came down to visit the recruiter and the recruiter showed her the bonus that nukes got. And that was pretty much all it wrote. All she wrote, you know, I was a nuke from that point on.
Wow. So you were in that a few years and then you went into civilian work doing all kinds of stuff in electrical and electronic engineering. And I mean, were you a consultant or what was your extensive work there?
The majority of that time I was an adult trainer. I went to work for a company that built machines, and these huge machines, like the size of like a 2 or a 3 car garage, the latest ones are even bigger. They're huge. Those machines were made. Those machines are used, or one of the machines that are used in the making of computer chips. So I worked for a company whose biggest customer, well, that's not accurate. Their most important customer was Intel at the time. Mm-hmm. This is back in the 90s and the 2000s.
Right, when that name was more commonplace because it was advertised every other
commercial. Intel Inside.
Right. Yeah.
And the bunny suit. You remember the bunny suit people?
Oh, yeah. All the different colors and stuff. Yeah.
Well, the colors were nonsense. They were all white. I spent a few years as one of those guys, but the majority of the time, I was either a trainer or an engineer and a leader in that area. And it was, again, it came down to understanding the technical aspects, having all this knowledge in your head, and being in this incredibly stressful situation and not letting the stress stop you from executing.
Wow.
Not letting that. Yeah. And I helped people do that. And I consulted with people on how to do that. And I of course did all the technical training as well. That was really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny that you should bring that up because, you know, I went to school as an electrical engineer and I saw several of my classmates get out before I did. And even within a year or two, I would see the lives that they started to get comfortable with doing that.
Yeah.
And like they would leave everything they had on the field, so to speak, at work. And really, by the time that they got home, you know, they didn't have any juice to really do anything. And I can't say I was too interested in keeping up with the Joneses there to really sacrifice myself too much. And that's one of the reasons I went into grad school is because I was like, you know, even though I spent at that point like 6 years trying to figure out what I, you know, being an electrical engineer, and I was like, nope. So you go into grad school, and that's when I got it started with studying leadership and entrepreneurship and becoming essentially a Maxwell flunky. And, you know, what's funny is that I still see a lot of my people that I knew in college still kind of struggling, I guess you could say, and trying to do something that I don't know if they necessarily have a passion for, but it pays the bills. And, you know, today I saw a new documentary that's actually available for free until the 30th, but this recording is going to go on after that. But anyway, called The Abundance Code,
that people can check out that talks about how people will get so stuck in the life that they're always programmed or thought that they were going to be since an early age or earlier anyway, that when they get to a certain point, they're not capable of seeing themselves do something else. Right.
Yep.
And, you know, Brendan Burchard, he calls this, going from that's the comfortable life. He also talks about a caged life, which is where people are just literally scrapping by more or less to survive. And then there's the charged life, which I like to believe that you and I are in, and or at least now. And I got to ask you, I mean, what's your take on how people can go from the cage or the comfortable life to a charged life?
It's a lot of question there. I totally relate to, you know, bumping into people that are in that comfortable life and they don't realize it, or they're not, you know, there's a lot of people that are comfortable there and they're comfortable. And that's the whole point of it. They're not going to do what they need to do to change. And they don't think it's worth it, mm-hmm. You know, so they're comfortable and they recognize it. These days, the education's out there. They see it. There's every opportunity in the world to do something else and do whatever you want to do, but it's scary. Mm. And I work with people primarily that I like to help people that are curious and they're interested in it. And I explain, you know, how their brains work and how the subconscious is going to affect their decisions. And then once they've stepped out and they're out trying and they're building something, that's where I really like to help people a lot, because that's where the impact can really be measured. Mm-hmm. Man, it's such a huge story, huge question that you asked there. And it takes, like, for me, it took decades. I've always, like, when I was in the Navy, actually going way back to, you know, I mean, there's the lemonade stands when I was a kid, there's cutting grass in the neighborhood. I remember in junior high school where we had to share a locker with somebody. So there was two people in a locker, and my dad was always really good with his hands and doing things like with woodwork. And so me and my locker mate, his name was David. We built a little shelf so that, you know, my stuff could be on top or I don't remember whose was on top, but you get my point. Mm-hmm. And, we sold those. So nice. Yeah. And people saw it and they were like, oh, I want one. And we started selling those and installing them between classes on breaks, you know, mm-hmm, so it's kind of cool. I guess my point with that is, if you have that bent, and then once I grew up and started to try building businesses, I kept hitting walls, right? I kept stopping. I kept, let's go MLM. Let's say MLM or anything, an Amazon business, right. A multi-level marketing business. Mm-hmm. You want to write books. You want to be a painter. You want to open a tax preparation office. You know, whatever your passion is, there is a prescription. There are steps. Somebody has done it before. And I kept getting pretty close to being, you know, sustaining or successful. And I would stop, and something would stop me. Again, connecting the dots, man. Connecting the dots looking forward is impossible, but looking back from where I'm at now, I can see that it was me every time stopping me. It was my training, my conditioning. I'm an engineer, like you said. I'm not going to put my test probes on this test point until I know what is going to be coming off of that test point.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to put it down there and I might see 24 volts or I might see 0 volts, but I'm not going to stick it on a spot where it's going to be 24,000 volts. Right.
Right.
And it's like, you got,
there's a story on that, but back in,
there's lots of stories. Yeah, in that.
Well, I can tell you, when I was in lab one time, I actually created an arc, and one of my buddies on the other side of the lab room actually saw the spark, and he wasn't even looking my direction. He just noticed that, you know, there was a flicker in the room. He was like, oh crap.
Brother, I got stories. I used to work those machines that I told you about.
Yeah.
The largest power supply I've ever worked with would put out well over, it was spec'd at, but it would put out well over 750,000 volts DC.
Mm, mm.
So you want to talk about some arcing that I've seen? Oh yeah.
Wow.
we could talk. I've got a story about a kid that, a couple people that got shocked one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but nobody died. They didn't die.
Just a little bit of Darwin going on there, though, huh?
So, but there's my point, right? That's the point. It's like we are, you and I, and the people I like to work with, have been. It has been injected into our DNA to understand that if I take this step, you know, an equal and opposite force is going to be applied, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then that's going to happen. And I see this plan, and I know what's going to happen every step of the way. I mean, Intel, hundreds of manufacturing steps to produce a computer chip. Mm-hmm. Hundreds. Arguably thousands if you look at the steps and break down the steps. And they know exactly what's going to happen in every one of those steps. It's scary when you step out there and you don't know what's going to happen, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, you know, one of the things that I did even when I was in college is I got into salsa lessons just because I needed a break from that linear thinking.
That was smart. Yeah. That was smart. You're a different guy, man. That's awesome. So yeah. I guess the thing that, kind of the thing that propelled me. So I said it before, common sense is not common, or common knowledge is not kind. I don't remember how he says it, but common practice. Common sense isn't common practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was always told, like in any of these classes, like I don't know exactly what your average listener is doing and whatnot, but I know that there is a lot of online classes out there right now for, you know, everything. You want to be rich in eBay selling, go take this class. You want to be rich in Amazon selling, go take that class. One of my favorite ones is self-publishing school. I know the founders of that. I know the founders of a few classes, but, and they all got these steps. And every one of those classes, the first thing they talk about is mindset. And I can tell you almost precisely the numbers of people that, well, let's be real. Somewhere less than 10% of the people that join a class are going to be those rock stars, those guys that knock it out of the park.
Right.
And somewhere, you know, 90%+ aren't. Right? They're just not.
Well, and let me ask you this real quick. We were told something similar to that in engineering.
Yep.
We were said that, hey, half of the people that you're with right here are not going to graduate as an electrical engineer or an engineer, period.
Same thing with nuclear power school. Yep.
And you know, the thing is that you realize that, but at the same time, you did have that personal conviction like I did that, okay, well, I don't know why he's saying that, because I'm just going to get the work done and whatever comes and I'm going to get graduate. That I think is the mindset that you're talking about, is that hell or high water, you're going to make this thing work.
There is so much more to it. I've learned, JC. That's kind of my point is you're right. Okay. But there is, what you just said is very, very, very top level. And yes, it's the attitude. It's the mindset. I like to use a word called belief. Mm-hmm. And it's the belief.
Right.
And that's kind of what brings in kind of the deer story. The thing that happened to me that made me realize the difference between that comfortable or charged or cage life and the charged life, the thing that made me realize what to do, that made me realize how to take the actions, because you and I had success. I'm going to speak for myself. I'm going to put it on you, JC. I had made it through nuclear power school, and that's, there is no question that, and then becoming a trainer, that is at least 100 times harder than building a business, at least. But yet I couldn't build the business.
Yeah.
And it came down to my brain, my mind, and what I had been trained in and how I had been trained how to think, and what I believed just didn't match. And that brings us back to what I was saying about the mindset portion of all these classes. Most of the people that are giving these classes, they've made a success. Like, if I had, you know, I make $1 million on Amazon, my next step is I want to share how to do that. Here's the steps I followed. A, B, C, D. Do these steps in Amazon and you're going to make $1 million. Oh, and don't forget your mindset. We need to talk about your mindset first. You have to know, you know, you have to do these things and have your mindset dialed in right, then apply those steps. 90 plus percent of the people will go and try and do the steps, but they don't get the mindset part. And but they think they do. Like, yeah, I've got a really, like the what's the number one thing? You tell me, what is the number one thing that every class or every leader will tell you that you must have in order to attain your big why, right? You got to have your big
why. The why and the vision, right.
Right? So, yeah, I got a vision. Yeah, I got my big why. Okay, let's do this. Step A, check. Step B, check. Somewhere around C or D, I fall apart, right? And that's the feeling that most people have. Well, and that's the lesson I think I learned that I kind of want to share today with everybody is there's more to it. There's so much more to it. And I learned that. So one of the things that I had done during my career as a trainer and all this other, the technical aspects, is I got into motorcycle riding, and I learned about, it took me about, as an adult, JC, have you ever ridden a motorcycle?
I have not had the opportunity, no.
Okay, so I'm glad, because sometimes when people tell me, yeah, I used to ride all the time on my farm, you know, and they rode dirt bikes from the time that they can remember. That's not who I'm talking about. You, though, as an adult, if you go through the system right now and you go take the classes and you learn how to ride a motorcycle, it's the same thing as basically buying you a gun, cocking it, loading it, cocking it, and put it into your temple and putting about 6 pounds on a 7 pound trigger and then telling you to run down the street at full speed. It's like, it's scary. And it took me about 2 years to realize it. And that's when things started really coming together. And the reason is, and here it comes, and this is the money, this is the meat shot. This is the important thing for your audience. On a motorcycle, as an adult rider, 100% of your reactions, your non-conscious, non-planned reactions are wrong. So if you are ever in a situation where your body does something without your mind thinking about it, there's a very big thing there. I hope everybody understands that. So it's like your blink. Or it's like if a backfire happens and you duck, right? Your body reacts. Or a sneeze, something tickles your nose and you sneeze. There's a reaction. If your body reacts, 100% of our trained responses on a motorcycle is wrong. And every one of those, anytime you react on a motorcycle, could kill you. And like I said, it took me about 2.5 years of riding a motorcycle and crashing and watching people crash to kind of put all this together. And this is, you know, this was when I was in my early 30s. And so I had the experience from the Navy in the 20s, and I'd grown and grown and grown. And that kind of, and then so another decade plus goes by till about 3 years ago when this incident happened that really kind of opened my eyes to everything. And I really put it all together. But does that make sense, that reaction part?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Cause what's, go ahead.
Well, and it's just like reaction wise, you want to, for example, in a crash, they tell you that you want to go loose, right? Where in a crash, you're going to like, you are naturally programmed to be very strict and, you know,
tense,
like, tense, right. With all your muscles.
And exactly.
That's going to, you know, in a wreck, that's going to break all your bones and everything. If you go loose, then you're going to be more malleable, I guess, maybe is a,
that's a, that is a, that is a good example. It's not an example. Yes, it's a really good example of it. Now, I mean, another one that I use all the time is, well, it's too take too long to explain it, but the summary of 100, like before the crash, we're talking like when you're riding down the road on a motorcycle. Now, we're not talking about you're riding in traffic and the car in front of you, brake lights come on, so you start to brake. That's not a reaction.
Right.
I'm talking about, but the point is, the whole point is this reaction thing. Your body's reaction is what I've realized is everything. My number one, the number one part of my framework is think, do not react. So if you're reacting, because that's what happens. Let me tie it together, and then I'll tell the deer story. A few minutes ago, we were using an example of an Amazon business, and there's step A. You know, there's, yes, I've got my mindset straight. I know my big why. And here's the steps. I start taking my steps, A, B, C, and then something stops me. Well, what's stopping me and what's stopping you or whoever else we're talking to? And what's going to stop? What's going to stop your listeners if they're thinking about starting a business is their subconscious is scared. Their subconscious doesn't want this to happen, whatever this is. Mm-hmm. And that is going to cause you to react. And that reaction is subtle. It's tiny. It could be, a reaction could be as simple as opening Facebook, because you would rather be distracted with Facebook than taking that step and doing whatever that next little task is. And that's the reaction. And I mean, there's a million ways that this happens. Perfectionism, procrastination, overanalysis, indecision on whether to turn left or right. You know, there's a million ways that this presents itself.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. That over analysis paralysis, man, was definitely my biggest thing for several years.
I relate. Great. I think that's engineering training, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be sure of what's going on. We want to know, if I push this button, that water's going to flow this way, you know, or whatever it is. So the thing that kind of had me realize this, about 3 years ago, I was in the middle of one of those classes. It was building a software as a service business. And just like every other time, I was hitting a wall and I wasn't getting it done. And I was out on a ride on my motorcycle one day, and I hit it. Well, a deer hit me. I was going straight. The deer ran into me at a perpendicular angle, and I was doing 85 miles an hour. It was traumatizing. It was crazy. I didn't even crash though. Like, not only did I survive, I didn't crash. And looking back at it, explaining how that didn't happen, and explaining what did happen, well, let me back it up. The traumatic part wasn't when the deer impacted me. When the deer impacted me, I was in a state of bliss. I was in the middle of an awesome ride. Everything was great. Actually, some people, the right term for it is I was in a state of flow. And I was executing. Everything was awesome. And then this deer got in my way. And then I got around the turn and I stopped the bike and I freaked out a little bit because holy cow, I didn't crash. That was just amazing. Right. And then I went back. And at this point, again, I had crashed, you know, a bunch of times when I was learning. And it's not uncommon for motorcyclists to crash. That's one of the, especially when you're working with new motorcycle riders. So I'd studied and I'd analyzed a lot of motorcycle crashes. So when I come back and I look at what actually happened, versus what I remember happening, that's when, like, the angels started to sing, if you would. Like, they say the worst evidence to appear in court or a cop for a police officer or a cop to carry to court is eyewitness testimony.
Right.
That's because, like, two eyewitnesses, one of them will say the truck was red, the other one will say it was blue. You know, everybody's perspective is different.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I had that lesson driven home to me deep, really deep. Would you like me to go into the gory detail, or do you want me to stay kind of high level?
Take it somewhere in the middle there would be fine, I suppose.
That's funny. All right, I'll do my best. I'll do my best to go kind of fast. All right, so here we go. Cruising along, coming out of a left-hand turn. This is one of those kind of, this is like a racing motorcycle. For those of you that ride bikes, it was a GSX R1000. And I ride, it's still in my garage. I love my bike. I got it. It was repaired. I'm not ever getting rid of that bike as far as I can tell. It's amazing. So it was a crotch rocket or a racing motorcycle, if you would. It is. Sorry, I'm saying was. I was coming out of a turn, and here's the thing about 85 miles an hour. I came out of a left-hand turn, and I was getting set up for a right-hand turn. And I wish that we were on camera a little bit because there's some visuals that go with this, but as you do that, your head moves from the left side of the motorcycle to the right side of the motorcycle, and that's when I glanced down.
Right.
And I looked at my speed, and I was doing 95 as I came out of that last turn. And this is a isolated country road in the middle of nowhere, no driveways. I know this road incredibly well, and this is nowhere near any kind of top speed I've ever been on that motorcycle, because I take it to the track and I have learned a lot about that motorcycle. So the key thing is, I decided at that moment when I saw 95, because I knew that road, I did not want to be going 95 at that point. I wanted to slow down and go about 85 so that at the exit of the turn, I knew how fast I would be going. Does that make sense? So that's important. Yeah. Right. I was operating a few minutes ago. We talked about reactions,
right? You're going by mechanical or muscle memory, essentially, more or less.
Well, you knew the
road, right?
I knew the road and I knew muscle memory and all that stuff. But the key thing is, I knew where my reaction threshold was at that moment.
Oh.
That's kind of the piece that I want to focus on. Is I wasn't, if I would have kept going at 95, I would have been closer to that reaction threshold than if I slowed down.
Mm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Okay. So it's like, That was an active choice then, to slow down and move myself away from my reaction threshold, because I knew if anything happens and I react, I could crash. I could die. So I don't want to react. I want to be cool, calm. Everything was great. It was a beautiful day. And I was in a perfect setup and I was getting ready. I picked out the spot where I was going to do my steering input. I was getting ready to roll on the throttle, and then all of a sudden, like 3 or 4 inches in front of my face, all I saw was a brown deer eye. I mean, wow. It was just, and I knew instantly what it was. It was that was the moment where I went, uh-oh. There was just this briefest moment of, oh crap. And then instantly that muscle, what you called muscle memory a second ago, at this point I'd been riding over a decade, over almost 15 years. I'd been helping newbies for 10 plus years. And I had so much knowledge of the motorcycle, the road, how I operate, how everything was put together, that all this knowledge was in my brain. And so the one most important thing leapt to the front of my consciousness. I saw deer eye. I thought, oh, crap. And then I thought, white line. Keep looking at the target. Keep looking at the white line. White line, white line, white. And I started saying that to myself. I don't remember if I was saying it out loud or not, but I was definitely thinking, white line. I felt the deer's neck break on my right wrist.
Mm.
So it hit right in front of my throttle. I felt the neck break. I remember feeling that and feeling the deer die. Like, it's dead. And then I felt its warm body wrap around my right leg. And at that moment, I thought, huh, I guess that probably would have worked. When Han Solo cut open that thing on the ice planet and him and Luke climbed inside.
Yeah.
I swear to God, dude, I envisioned that like nothing. I remember it clear as a bell. Huh, that would have worked. And then I went back to white line. And then I saw an antler. I saw the deer's antler fly from like the right-hand side of my vision up and over toward the left. And I thought, oh, crap, that gets in the front wheel. It could topple me and it could make me crash. So I reached up and I caught it. And with my left hand, I just calmly reached up, grabbed it. And I thought, no, I don't want to see the deer guts. I don't want to see the spine. I don't want to see any of that. I want to hold that down. So I held it down over my, like, to the right a little bit. And then I went back to white line. And then I was around the turn. And then I went to throw the deer head away so I could grab my clutch and stop the bike. And I realized it was part of my motorcycle. It wasn't the antler. It was a doe that hit me. And what it was one of my mirrors.
Oh.
So she hit so hard that she broke a 1/8-inch cast aluminum piece of metal that was, I don't know, 4 inches long. I mean, she smacked my bike. And it broke off my whole front fairing. And that's what was flopping over. And it was connected with a thick electrical cable. So if it would have fallen, it surely would have gotten in my front wheel.
Yeah.
So there's something that really would have caused me to crash that was allowed to be in my consciousness that I perceived, and I calmly, coolly handled it.
Mm. Wow.
So
not only the time slowed down for you, but you turned into like a ninja there briefly too.
if you haven't, we're not done. There's that. that's the part where it's like, I didn't crash. Woohoo. Remember, the traumatic part's coming up. Now, if you haven't read it, there's a book called The Rise of Superman, and I highly recommend it. It talks about the state of flow, and it talks about how my brain was working in that moment. And that book came into my life less than a week after this deer incident. I also bought my first GoPro less than a week later. But
Just in case it happens again.
And,
right?
Yeah, I haven't needed it since then, but... So I was in a state of flow is what was happening. Now, when I go back to investigate it, here's the holy crap part. You ready? I go back to investigate what happened. What really happened was when she hit me, my front wheel immediately turned as sharp as it could to the right because of the way that she died and where she hit me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That caused my motorcycle to buck into the air. I flew 12 feet straight and about 6 feet to the left and landed. Then, because you haven't ridden a motorcycle, imagine sitting on a motorcycle for a second, okay? It's just parked. You're sitting there and you reach up and you grab the right handlebar and you pull it back toward the tank as far as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Let go of it, reach up and grab the left handlebar and do the same thing again. And then grab the right handlebar, back to the tank, left handlebar, back to the tank. Okay, so can you see what's happening there? Yeah. The front wheel's turning left to right as far as it can.
Oh, yeah. I've seen motorcycle accidents, like people doing that whole shimmy down the road.
It's called a tank slapper.
Yeah.
I did 6 tank slappers. I can take you down to the atomic level physics of what's going on between literally the rubber and the road. Or walk you all the way up through the bike and the suspension and everything that's going on. But the bottom line is this. I flew 12 feet in the air straight, 6 feet sideways, landed, did half a dozen tank slappers, which is the equivalent of a bucking bronco going down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'm literally bucking up and down. I'm burning rubber because I know I did this because of the rubber marks on the road. So I should be smelling the burning rubber. All this stuff is happening. And that's when I'm thinking about Han Solo, Luke, and catching the deer antler.
Wow. Wow.
So the difference between my perceived reality and what really, what I know physically happened from photo, I have pictures of all that, you know, the marks and stuff. The difference between those two things is what's caused me to dive into the brain for the last 3 years. And that's what's culminated with basically me becoming a certified high performance coach and helping people understand how their brains work so that we can turn their subconscious from a hindrance or an anchor into a freaking turbo boosting rocket.
Wow. So you're kind of exploring there's a phrase in technical terms that you might be familiar with. It's like, what is it? Steps A through D, and I'm probably going to tear it up as well. But step A is get started. Step B is do some things. Step C is ?? And step D is profit.
Very technical. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the part that's scary to 90+%. That's why they don't move forward, is because they're scared of whatever that ?? Is. They don't know what the results of their actions are going to be. And that's what we've been trained over and over and over to not just take risks like that.
Mm.
But to hit that profit and to live a truly charged life, it takes a little bit of that risk. Mm. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you're depending on who we're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
One of my clients is actually a director level executive, and their charged life is working in corporate America. Like they see they're building retirement. They're thrilled to death about the company they work for. They're excited about their job. So, you know, I don't want to make it sound like you have to be a business owner or you're a loser. I don't want to pull a Gary Vaynerchuk on you over here.
Well, I don't even think he promotes that, because one of the things that he was saying is that there's going to be your A's, your B's, your C's, your D's, et cetera. You know,
yeah.
And not saying that those are particular levels. Those are just different categorizations of people, which is totally true. But,
totally.
You know, and I think for people though that want to have full control of themselves, mm-hmm. then I think business is the way to go for the most part. At least my personal belief.
How do they say it? An entrepreneur is somebody that's willing to work 80 hours a week so they don't have to work 40?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree. I'm one of my to let your audience, like, the secret is to figure out what your triggers are and figure out habits and practices to build around those triggers so that they trigger you in the right way instead of the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my triggers is, one of my responses, one of my thought patterns is to remind myself of, I'm living the dream. I'm not working for somebody. If I want to right now, I can hang up on this call and I can go to the pool and I can swim, or I can go for a hike, or, you know, whatever I want to do.
Right.
So yeah, I agree with you 100%. But I'm not going to hang up on this call either.
Yay. So kind of taking a little step back, because you were talking about the fact that you were in the SAS class there, which I'm pretty sure we both know which one that was. Let's kind of go back on this to the fact that you were actually coaching since 2008. And okay. More or less, right? Executive and entrepreneurial coaching, right?
I call my executives around 2008. I would say for about 4 or 5 years, I've been doing entrepreneurial coaching, mm-hmm. in different ways. And I didn't really know what I was doing as well as I do now, obviously. The two big differences were when I hit that deer and I started understanding all my background. Like I have this, you know, learned experience, if you will, through my life, mm-hmm. starting with the Navy and helping people operate, even though their subconscious is telling them to ball up into a little ball and cry like a baby. that's the right thing to do if you're smart, you know? And then the deer hit, and then I started helping entrepreneurs, especially focusing there. And then I'm really stoked to be one of Brendan's certified high performance coaches because that system is just amazing.
Right.
It really is.
Right. So specifically though, there's that when you, what you got out of the deer incident, we'll call it, was that the fact that you were able to help other people slow down or like slow down their time and actually focus on, or not necessarily specialize, but see detail what's going on.
So that I started doing two things. One of them is helping people hack into a state of flow.
Okay.
So that I was performing like I've only performed a few times in my life when I had that deer incident,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that slowed down time. Oh, there's an antler. Let me move that out of the way. Stay focused on my goal. That cool, calm performance. Now, the other piece is I didn't change my throttle position. My hands are moving back and forth. My ass is probably coming off the bike, or at least my head is bopping around, and I'm not reacting. So there's two things there. There's I help people learn how to operate in a state of flow so that you're in that. I can go wash dishes and be in a state of flow. And obviously when I choose to be in a state of flow and I'm working on my copywriting or I'm working on my website or I'm working on an interview, you know, those are all times when I am in a state of flow now.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece is realizing how much your brain and your perspective affect everything. Because my brain, before my perception of half of the things, more than half of the things that I experienced that day, I did not perceive it.
Mm.
It's not that I forgot it. It's not perceived. So as you sit here and you look at, you know, those, you said A, B, question mark, profit.
Right.
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 As you sit there at step B and the reality is before, like there's people probably listening that are like teetering. Should I start writing this book? Should I take this class? You know, so they haven't even taken step A yet. They're looking at those question marks and their brain, their learned patterns are stopping them. Because they're uncertain. And that uncertainty to your subconscious is terrifying. And your subconscious is going to do everything it can to not have you take those steps.
Hmm. Yeah.
So have you ever noticed, for example, in the morning you make really good decisions and in the evenings you don't make such good decisions?
Yeah.
So yeah. basic decision fatigue, right?
Right.
So first off, not a lot of people know about that. I'm shocked at how many people don't, but that's why Steve Jobs wore that outfit, right? And I figured everybody would know that because of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, because he doesn't have the space, so he doesn't have to waste time actually, you know, making that decision. You can put that towards something else.
Well, maybe that's it. It's not the time. It's the physical energy.
Right.
It's the energy that your body is expending.
Right.
No, people say time management a lot, but people focus on time management. But what you're going to find, what I've found is it's all about energy management.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is when you're in your quote unquote right mind, you're in your right mind. So you're awake, you're alert, you're calmly and coolly logically thinking about things, and you're like, and you hear that little voice. Oh, that's something else I want to make sure and share with you guys. You hear that little voice telling you, yeah, man, you're really good at that. You should go help other people. You should build that business. You should try that whatever it is. And you got that voice kind of urging you that way, you know, and then later in the day when you feel that as you're driving to work and you're listening to this podcast, let's say, right. And then in the afternoon when you're driving home and you're exhausted from a long day of work and your energy is low, all you can see is those question marks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, yeah. I help people think clearly so that they can make decisions and then stick to those decisions. I don't teach them what to think. That's kind of scary.
Right. So just a few more questions here before we get into the rapid fires. We were talking about the certification with Brendan. And one of the things that I have an interest in is, what's really the difference between, let's say, if someone goes to the High Performance Academy, which a lot of people that, you know, I'm hanging around with at this point on Facebook, they've been to that and they've been to the Experts Academy. What's the difference between going through certification like you have versus going through High Performance Academy? Or do you know?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Just making sure.
Oh yeah. I'm just trying to, like, it's like asking the difference between, well, if you're hanging out on the moon and then you go to the sun, what's the difference? It's like, well, there's a lot there. So first off, let me throw my experience in there one more time. You look at the Navy nuclear certification and everything I've been through there, the job that I had working for a company, working for Intel, and all the certifications I had there. I actually developed a certification program when I was there for Intel employees that Intel took to all their other suppliers and said, this is how we want it. Mm. So they copied mine and took it to most of their other suppliers that were similar, build similar machines, and said, this is what we want it to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to work for Intel. And you want to talk about, their certification process is as bad. It's actually more anal than the Navy. It's pretty crazy. But, so I've been through some certifications and I've developed certification programs. And I can say that Brendan's certification program for his high performance coaches,
mm-hmm,
is impressive to me. I can't say it's the most demanding certification I've ever been through, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear power school will always hold that.
Right.
Right. It's just, that was over 2.5 years of intense 12 plus hour days. Just constant.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at a program, if you're thinking about being a coach, then CHPC is the way to go, in my opinion. Now, if you're, so there's that. The different HPA in my mind is Brendan Burchard standing on the stage trying to share with everybody in that audience in 4 days everything he knows about you performing at your best.
Mm-hmm.
The CHPC program basically teaches me, or teaches people, how to help people apply those steps.
Okay.
Because if you've got, like, let's be real, how much of HPA have you applied to your life?
Right.
If you say more than 10%, I'm going to call bullshit. You know what I'm saying? There's no way, right?
The one thing I remember from HPA is that, man, he eats a lot of greens.
Yep, he definitely does.
And he drinks a lot of water, man. That must be a lot of trips to the bathroom.
Oh yeah. So there's two aspects there. There's not more HPA in CHPC in a week with him. It's the process that he uses to work with Oprah and her people. It's the same process, and I'm proud of that, because he charges, in order for you to buy him, he gives you 12 sessions for from what I hear, for $250,000. He charges $250,000 for you to work with Brendan Burchard one-on-one personally.
Wow.
And that's it's the same 12 sessions that I've got access to that I help people with for a lot less. But it doesn't matter. And here's the cool part. These sessions, it doesn't matter who, if the client wants and values what's happening, that's all that matters. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the sessions are so solid and so driven and so, I mean, I cannot believe how well orchestrated these sessions are. But it comes from Brandon's over 20 years experience doing it.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So this is all live, just like the, but instead of 4 days, it's an entire week.
It's 5 days. 5 days. And I mean, I can break down like what goes down if you want me to. He gets up there and he, so I've been to two of the CHPC processes now. I've been to the first one that I went to and I got certified. And then I went to the second one for recert, and it's more him teaching one. There's a little bit of, you know, how to build the business and some resources there, but it's mostly just us practicing these sessions with each other.
Oh.
Him giving us his golden nuggets, if you will, and his insight onto what each session is really all about, and how to help people understand this stuff about themselves. Mm. And it comes down, man, like I said, if you've applied 10% of HPA, you're a rock star. And nobody has. And, well, very few people. I actually know some people that have. They're impressive sons of guns. But it usually comes down to one itty-bitty little habit. Like, when I'm working with a client, one of these, if a client can apply one habit through each session, their life is so different.
Mm.
It's just so different.
And so the five areas that you guys focus in is clarity, energy, productivity, courage, and influence, right?
Yes, sir.
And so generally speaking, how can someone realize if they're having problems in just like, say, one of them, for example? Let's just take courage, for example.
Well, I was just going to run through them all real quick, but okay. Yeah.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Go ahead.
Well, like clarity. Are you questioning? Do you have a question? You know, do you have a question on what you're going to do tomorrow? Do you want, you know, do you think that maybe you want to start a business? Do you think that maybe you want to go for that promotion? Do you think maybe you want to change your job? Do you think maybe you want to break up with the girlfriend or your boyfriend? Is there, you know, any question? Are you living intentionally? Purpose driven intentionally. If you know where you want to be in 20 years and you know what you want people to say about you when you die, and you wake up in the morning thinking about that and you say, today I'm doing these three things because when I die, I want people to remember this, then you're living pretty clear. And if you're not, then there's room for improvement. Mm. Courage. Are you questioning? Are you 100% confident in all of your interactions? Are you bringing who you truly are to the boardroom, to the office, to your relationship with your spouse, to your kids? Are you being who you really want to be 100% of the time? Are you brave enough? I've helped people, you know, come out of the closet. I've helped a lot of people do a lot of things. Let's put it that way. And if you're hiding something, if you're hiding behind, you know, that thin veil and not being your true self, then you're not being brave. Hmm. Productivity, energy. I said it a few minutes ago. It really isn't about time management anymore. Because everybody's got a calendar and everybody knows how to manage their time to some degree. It's about energy management and being able, it's not necessarily being able to maintain. I had somebody ask me how I stayed enthused and so pumped up all day long. And it's not necessarily how to do that, because not everybody can do that, especially straight off the bat. It's about how to recognize when your energy starts to go down so that you're not performing the wrong tasks in that down mode. You don't beat yourself up for not doing enough. You don't, you know, all the, what you're thinking about when you go down into that down energy mode, because everybody has to recover, including Brendan.
Mm-hmm. Except that it seems that all that water gives him constant energy, but you know.
I'm looking forward to being able to spending a little bit of time with him and asking him some questions, because I believe he literally stays in a state of flow for weeks at a time. But his downtime, like there's what I know about the state of flow and operating in the state of flow and stuff. Mm-hmm. Basically, I teach people how to hack the state of flow on a daily cycle. Mm-hmm. And there's always a recovery period. You have to rest. I'm pretty sure he's in a place where he is and he's done this for so long and constantly worked on his life that he's at a place where, because that's the secret. I'll tell you, I want to tie that in a second. He's at a place where he probably goes for weeks, if not a couple months, and then he takes a week or two and he goes down. I'm guessing hard. Now, so there's the other benefit. If you're thinking about doing CHPC to learn something and not be a coach, well, being a coach, I have responsibilities. I have to apply this stuff to myself, right? I feel really weird if I'm going to tell somebody that they should be using the productivity planner every day and I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So that's another benefit of being a coach or going through this process. Mm. Influence is important because to me, to everybody, whether you're talking about arguing over whose turn it is to do the dishes or whether or not to invest, you know, that $50 billion in the new direction for the company or whatever. I mean, the whole range. Flashing back to my time in the fab or whatever, who goes on break first? Flashing back to my relationship with my girlfriend, my clients. One of my most impactful, influential discussions was with a client. It was fairly recently. He has a SaaS, and he a successful SaaS where he has lots of clients, several clients, a bunch of clients. And he's trying to grow his SaaS, and it's like, okay, he's hit a wall. That's kind of what I do, is I help people get over these walls or around them or whatever.
And just for clarification, SaaS is software as a service, for those of you guys not sure what that is.
Yeah, software as a service. So
something, what's one off that he can think of right off the hand?
Microsoft Office.
Yeah. There you go.
Something
as a membership site would be Google email, for example, for a company.
Gmail.
Yeah. They got the
free.
Go ahead.
I was going to say on your phone, the calculator app, that's a SaaS.
Gotcha. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Any software that provides a service, but there's ways to monetize it and there's free one. Anyway, so he's got one. And he's struggling, and he's struggling with getting, you know, customers on board. Like he's able to maintain a certain level or whatever. So we start going down through the influence section, and it turns out that he, as an individual in his previous world, has influenced people before, which makes sense. And you start investigating how he influenced those people. And then it's like, well, look at the people that you're trying to influence now. And it's the process of how to influence those people, right? And how good you are at it. And it resulted in us taking his story, and instead of just marketing the SaaS's features and benefits and stuff and saying, this is really good for your business. It's, I'm going to help you grow your business based on all my experience in growing a business. And so he's going to help his audience in a whole new and different way based on that discussion of the how to influence people. It's a very powerful session.
Gotcha. And so if someone is wanting to potentially work with you, I mean, what's the process like? You were talking about webinar earlier today you did. Is that part of the process, or what kind of time commitment are we looking at, or what?
That's another cool thing about the way Brendan does this, is he basically says, here's the material and you can apply it to your stuff however you want to, as long as you stay within these parameters. They're like when I call something high performance coaching, I have to use these same words, and I have to use his framework. Mm-hmm. So there's different coaches out there. Some coaches do it weekly, where they'll have one session per week, and there's a dozen sessions. So you're looking at 3 months of weekly calls, right? Mm-hmm. Other coaches do it every other week. I personally like the monthly model. And not only do I typically, not always, but what I like to do is I like to take clients through a process where I get to know them a little bit. And then we do a little bit of pre-education, if you will. And that stuff that we were talking about with the deer and all that stuff, that's the piece that I can tell you, like you've been to HPA, you know, Brendan has a couple habits that he tries to share, right?
Right.
Knowing those habits, me telling you, you know, you should meditate every day, you should journal, you should drink, six liters of water a day. You should eat a pound and a half of spinach a day. Great. Okay. But actually doing it, actually applying that to your life, is the place where I come in different. I make sure that you are empowered to understand how your brain is going to stop you. So we go through that a little bit, and that might be a class, or that might be some one-on-one discussions. And then I start people into the high performance coaching package. Typically, I like to do 2 calls a month focusing on one of the sessions. And then I like to plug people into masterminds. Mm. So I run some masterminds. I have a coaching mastermind where some of us coaches are sharing our insights and helping each other. A marketing mastermind, you know, a couple other little masterminds, business owners that are trying to go from 1.5 to 5 million a year in revenue. I have a couple other masterminds where it's a really focused topic on that mastermind, but everybody associated with that is also one of my high performance coaching clients. So we talk about high performance stuff in the mastermind, as well as whatever we're talking about, like marketing, for example. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So
How do people enter the funnel, generally speaking?
There's webinars. There's a lot of ways people can enter the funnel. If you're interested right now, I'm just going to say, reach out. Tell me you found me, you heard about this on JC, you know, on this podcast, on the AOL podcast, and say hi. And let's talk. My name is Clay. My whole thing is enthusiasm. I like to help people live enthusiastically. So if you misspell enthusiastically and put my name at the end, enthusiasticclay.com is the website. So enthusiasticclay.com is the website. The blog is full of awesome articles and videos that help people live enthused, that may help me live enthused, I'll put it that way, and I share them with people. Mm-hmm. And then there are a couple offers, like how to hack flow. I have a free PDF download. And then I have at least 2 different free video series, one about belief circles and targets, and one about getting it done.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, cool. You ready for the rapid fires?
I'm nervous.
All right. Well, again, I mean, these are the questions are fast, but you don't have to be too particularly fast. So what are 3 thought leaders that you've recommended to other people to check out the most?
Stephen Kotler, the book, The Rise of Superman, and he's got several other ones. I really love his perspective. Brendan Bouchard, I tell people, step number one, hide your wallet. Step number two, go check out all his free stuff. Incredible. He's an incredible marketer, and he's incredible. Napoleon Hill.
Yeah.
Think and Grow Rich. And recently, he's got a new book out, or he doesn't have a new book out. They finally released.
I was about to.
Yeah. Well, if you haven't heard the story and if you haven't read it, Outwitting the Devil. Whoa. Just whoa. Like that book, he basically wrote that book, I think, three or four years after Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. But it was hidden until 2012.
Oh, no kidding.
And whoa.
Wow.
The story about the book is as awesome as the book. And they're both told in the book. It's amazing.
Huh. Nice.
But you have to read Think and Grow Rich first.
Yeah. And not just the first third of it.
No.
What is one book that has catapulted you to where you are today?
I've already mentioned two.
Mm-hmm.
Think and Grow Rich and Rise of Superman. On top of that one, I would throw a book called Iconoclasts. It's not very well known, but it teaches about the difference between how iconoclasts, people that change the world, it teaches how their brains are different than most of our brains.
Hmm. What are three truths you've learned over time that you'd share with others?
Anything the mind of man can conceive and believe. I want to emphasize that because there's a lot of anything the mind of man can conceive, he can achieve. Nope. Believe. You got to keep that and believe in there. It's incredibly important. There's that one. Opposites attract and likes repel. Now this is going to get weird. Opposites attract and likes repel, except when you're talking about the law of attraction. and here's the weird part. Like I fought this for years, right? Because you and me, we know opposites attract. Mm-hmm. Pluses and minuses, north south pole, right?
Right.
You can bring that to relationships.
Personalities, right?
Personalities, right. And relationships. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've helped couples for decades with that knowledge. But the law of attraction, when they say like, I don't know exactly the quote, but like attracts like, you get what you think, you know, when you that whole mindset thing, it's true, it's real, and I understand how it works now. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that what I see on that is that, you know, when you go to relationships, for example, friends will have, you know, that's, you're going to be your like attracts like, and then your deep relationships are people that compliment you. If that makes sense.
To some level, yes, but even, yes, I'll go with that. And then my third one, and this one has gotten me into trouble in the past, but it's also awesome. Size matters. I don't care what anybody ever tells you. On the planet Earth, size matters. Do you have a question about that? I'll go deeper if you want me to. I'm not, for example, I'm not saying bigger is better. Didn't say that. I said size matters. Not bigger is better. Not smaller is better. I said it matters. And I'm not talking sexually necessarily. I'm saying, here's the question that I love to ask people. It's a quiz. Can you name one thing on the planet where size does not matter? And I found one person to answer that question, and I think I agree, but it needs more contemplation. But I can't, and there's the bad thing is, since I've had that conversation, I can't remember what it was. Yeah.
Huh. Wow. Age old question. Forgot the answer. If you were going to place any ad on social media cost free, what would it say and which platform would you use?
Wow, you just opened it up. You know what? It would have to do with, it would be on YouTube, and it would be about my confident cornering from helping motorcycle riders. It would be a YouTube video ad, and it would be a very good one. And it would be that. Yeah. Cause that's where my, like, I love helping people, but I have never felt as much of an impact as when I know I've saved somebody's life, or because they come to me and tell me the stories about how they didn't die because they remembered I said this or whatever. And that's pretty, or unfortunately the other end of it is I've had a lot of people come to me after they've crashed and said, "Oh, I get it now. Thank you for saving so many lives." That's the one that hurts. It's because that, you know, I'm about 80% effective, 80 to 90% effective when I have a group of a dozen, 10 young adult males learning how to ride a bike. I'm about 60% effective with them. Mm-hmm. And about 80 or 90% effective with older adult males and women. And so the young adult males tend to go on to crash and then come back and go, "Oh, I get it."
What is something you believed as a 30-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is bogus?
It's a question that I had. People used to tell me to go faster, you need to slow down. And I didn't buy it. And now I really get it. Like, you really, really, in every example, and slow down means different things in different environments. On a motorcycle, it physically means slow down. In building your business, it means slow down and try and get a bigger, longer perspective. It doesn't mean don't take actions, but slow down. Anytime you want to go faster, slow down a little bit and you will go faster.
Nice. And the last rapid fire question is, when you think of the word success, who comes to mind and why?
Wow. Multiple people are jumping into my head right now for different reasons, because rarely is someone balanced. God, I want to say myself, but of course the nagging horrible question starts popping up, right? like, well, what about this time and that time? Oh, yeah. But, wow, that's a deep one. I want to say Brendan. I'm going to go Brendan because I believe he is doing what he wants to do. And he's living a life that he wants to live. I want to be clear about that. Not because he's good on stage or because he's got a great marketing thing or, you know, nothing like that. I really believe he's living intentionally. Hmm. I might not agree with everything. I don't know what I could disagree with off the top of my head, but I'm just saying I believe he is living intentionally. He's not reacting. He's making decisions and thinking and making plans and doing and living the life that he wants to live.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. I would agree. He is one of the few that I can think of. That's for sure. He has more of a zen where other people are, like, if you look at Gary, you know, he's just in it for the fight, you know. It's just, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, you know, I've watched a little bit of Gary's stuff, and he recently started talking. I could say almost the same thing about him. Like, he wants to own the Jets, you know, and yeah. he's he's working toward that. And I feel like he's getting a little older now and he's thinking about his kids and stuff a little bit. And he's, I'm not saying he's not shooting for the Jets anymore, but I think he's living pretty freaking intentionally. Mm-hmm. I mean, heck, look at your boy, Ty Lopez. He's living intentionally, right? I'm not going to say I agree with everything he says or anything like that, or the lifestyle that he's living, but he's definitely living with intention if you follow him on social media and believe what you see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I haven't checked him out too much yet. I've just heard about him. I know who you're talking about, but yeah.
I saw him speak live, and I can't argue with anything he says, except the he's kind of like a Gary Vee. He's pretty fanatical. Mm-hmm. Like it seems that's not my lifestyle. I don't want that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool. Brendan, like it.
Yeah.
If someone is just realizing that they want to live a life that is more defined by themselves, what are four suggestions that you give that they do in order to get to that point?
Clarity, clarity, courage, productivity, and influence.
Yeah.
Like, come do a clarity session, a courage session, a productivity session, and an influence session.
Nice.
Yeah. And energy is going to fix itself because you're super clear. But in all seriousness, clarity. The pieces of advice that I give are this. I don't care how you do it. There is an infinite array of options out there. You can download apps. You can watch it on YouTube. You can go to a shaman. You can ask somebody how to do it. Don't let yourself not meditate again. Start meditating. Develop a meditating habit daily. Mm. Now. Period. Number two, journal. Start a journaling habit now. With paper, it can be pencil or it can be pen, but on paper. Meditate and journal now. About what? Gratitude. If you do nothing but start shifting more attention to more time, your attention for more time a day on gratitude, those three things in that order are game changers. And if you're coming from our background and you're not doing those things, you're not going to take the steps. Those question marks are going to stop you every time.
Hmm. You had mentioned that people can find you on social or on your website at enthusiasticclay.com. What are your social media accounts?
Same thing. I don't use Twitter very much. I'm on there. Same name, Enthusiastic Clay. Misspelled enthusiastically with a clay at the back. Facebook, you can find me, Enthusiastic Clay. And Snapchat. You on Snapchat yet?
Eek. Just had a big debate about that, but no. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on it. Just don't use it.
Highly recommend you check out the podcast Answer Man Snapchat tutorial.
I just promoted that today, actually, for people that are interested.
In yeah, it's a really good tutorial, and I highly recommend you start using it.
Cool. All right, yeah. Man. Well, that's pretty much about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate thank you for having me, man. I've really enjoyed it. I've really, really enjoyed it. It's been fun. Chatting with a like-minded guy with a similar background, you know, the electronics and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people don't get it for sure.
Cool. Yeah.
All right, man.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, there you have it. What a super impactful chat. That story with the deer were always set him a part of my mind of who he is and what he helps people do. And in fact, I have to admit that he, we talked about an hour or so after the conversation there ended, just talking about stuff and the online business world as a whole and some of the names that are out there and making waves. And some of them actually include some of my past guests. So congratulations to them. But Clay, he, you know, he's a really good guy. You all get to know as well, and connect with him on social media. And you can do that via the show notes, via newinceptions.com/session46. And this week's show note extras for this particular session include a few extra resources that I think you guys will get a lot of value from, and they're all from him. The first video of Clay, he's actually discussing with Tara Housey how to use Snapchat to drive engagement and increase revenue. And personally, this is one I definitely got a lot from, because I've been struggling with the value of Snapchat for quite some time, and a lot of you guys actually know that. And in fact, I think the biggest part is that it's kind of just seems really like a distraction. Clay, on the other hand, sees it quite differently, just like Gary Vee, and you know, they're going to be the biggest proponents that I know of the platform, and I think if you check out this video, you'll understand why they love it so much. But again, it's not, I don't know, I guess my struggle is, how is it adding value to people? And because, I mean, every little blip is just a little couple of seconds. So maybe I'll just watch it a few times and I might actually feel a little bit better about it. The next video is with Clay talking with his guest about personal branding. The third video is then of Clay discussing reasons why you might be avoiding success in your life, which is actually an interesting topic. They actually would be avoiding success. Kind of alien to me. And the fourth and final piece is a link to a podcast that he did with the bootstrap businessmen, Dale Roberts and Kevin Allen. So definitely check out all those resources, and I think you'll get a lot of value from each and every one of them. But that pretty much wraps up session 46. Again, go to newinceptions.com/session46 to get the show notes for today's show. And in next week's session of the Angles of Latitude podcast, you can join me again as Ginger and I get to sit down and talk with a really unique individual and fellow TEDx speaker of hers, Stephen Robinson. And Stephen Robinson might have heard of him because he's the founder of Fit2 Skills, which happens to be a fairly popular channel on YouTube. And in a chat with Stephen, we get into where the idea of Fit2 Skills came from, and that's skills with a Z, his experience with his TEDx talk, and his experience working at his local entrepreneurial incubator. I think you'll find Stephen to be a really interesting guy, his message to be rather unique, and I definitely think he'll inspire you to find your own skill that you're great at. So that said, I think that pretty much wraps things up today, and until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.